Hello and welcome to the Game Developer Podcast. On this week's episode, we interview John Warren, who's the CMO and a co-founder at Glider, which is a new controller device that folks can use actually with their feet, an accessibility feature, and many, many, many other cool features for it. So we talked with John today, had a really cool interview, talked about a lot of different use cases for the device. As a quick point of clarification and disclosure, John is actually a personal friend of mine, and I used to work with him, but I do not anymore. And the conversation is really fantastic here. So without further ado, here's the episode. John, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Game Developer Podcast. It's really just called the Game Developer Podcast. We don't have another name for it, but I want to welcome you to talk about Glider. I'm very excited about Glider. Would you like to give the pitch? I don't want to give like a fake pitch. I would love for you to introduce your cool project and yourself.
I think that should be a new thing, though. I think more hosts and interviewers should just just take their notes and distill them into a pitch that, you know, and then we could take from that. You know, maybe you do it better. I've heard a few people over the past week or so pitch it better than I do. So maybe I should start getting them involved. Hi. We're potting together again. It's, you know,
I know.
Game Developer Podcast is great and it's simple. I don't think you need to change it. It doesn't need to, you know, be something, you know, wild. It's just, you know, it is what it is. I think it's good.
It says what it is on the tin, which is a phrase I never heard growing up, but started hearing in the last like 2 years. And I've always been like, how many, I don't even call it a tin. I called it a can growing up, but it's a thing now. What it says on the tin.
The serving size makes sense. You know, it's like you look at the label and it's like, what we ate a package of frozen pot stickers last night.
Good.
The serving size was literally 3.5 pot stickers. What are we doing?
Not enough.
I'm not cutting in half a frozen pot sticker in any way. I thought it was very strange. Anyway, Glider is a foot operated controller for video games and VR and pretty much anything else you want to do in your digital world. It is the brainchild of a man named Rick Tett in Dallas, Texas, who saw his nephew riding around one of those hoverboards that, you know, your cousins and nieces and nephews have, you know, ridden around on and cracked their skulls open and stuff.
Yeah.
And he watched his nephew, you know, ride around on one years ago and was like, does this actual kind of mechanism, this philosophy of movement exist in digital spaces? And it really didn't. And you know, we can get into kind of how it differs from other stuff on the market. But I got involved about a year ago and we're trying to get this thing to market by the end of the year, which is really exciting. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Oh, I'm also very excited. Because we are friends, which of course I said in the intro, and you are my ex-boss, these are all the good disclosure statements I have to make. I have known, obviously, that you were involved in the process, and you typically sort of colloquially called it the foot thing, which is also amazing. So I've known a little bit about that, but could you tell our cool audience here a little bit about how you got involved? Were you kind of like looking to get involved in hardware
my background, you know, I started in the games industry 13 years ago. In fact, I started my first studio almost exactly 13 years ago, like today.
Oh, wow.
Which is great. Doesn't have any sort of effect on my brain or how I feel about things at all.
Sure.
And so I started in game development and then I went into games media and then that ended.
Yep.
And can we talk about industry things on this podcast?
Absolutely. This is okay. This is all about industry.
As a quick aside,
yeah.
I seriously interviewed for five roles when I lost my job at FanBite.
Yeah.
And I interviewed for about five roles got to an interview stage where it felt like I could have been made an offer, right?
Yeah.
To five places.
Oh my God.
Four of them have either shuttered or catastrophically laid off their staff over the past 9 months or so.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So I'm not like saying I dodged a bullet or anything like that, because it would have been lovely to work with those people and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But that has been really kind of, it's one of those things that is darkly validating, but also so depressing to watch that kind of happen and be close to it. And obviously we have friends and mutual acquaintances that are going through it right now. And so anyway, that's just table setting for kind of like, I wanted to kind of stay in media or go back to game development or publishing.
Sure.
And that just wasn't coming together. And so Rick, who and known my some of my family for a while in the Dallas area, he had gotten in touch with me like 4 years ago about this device. And I was working, for a Tencent subsidiary. They're a little bit grabby when it comes to other projects.
Yeah.
So I politely declined to kind of work on it. But my honest takeaway when he showed me the device and when I talked to him was like, not being a hardware guy, I was like, this has got to exist already, Rick. Like, this is so obvious to me that like someone's had to have done this. So I didn't really think about it again. And then when I lost my job and he caught wind that I was on the market, he reached out again, and I kind of took it more seriously, and I did some more market research, and I was like, a lot of what's out there on the market is designed for one thing.
Yeah.
And it's either like, one click switching between scenes on like, while you're streaming, or like, one extra button that you can map, or it's something that's designed to do one action, like driving a car or flying a plane or whatever. And nothing is really kind of giving this kind of set of options the way that this device did. And this is before I even tried it out. So once we started talking about it and he sent me a prototype, I started playing a bunch of different games with it and realized that this was, I think, a huge opportunity. And I think it felt right to jump on board, because we're starting to see, I think, a bit of a shift in the way people think about controllers, not only from an accessibility side, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but also, we're putting back paddles on elite game pads, and we're now charging $160 or whatever for controllers that add 4 to 5 to 6 buttons on it. So like, hardware manufacturers are seeing that overload is a problem, but they're trying to solve the issue by cramming more stuff onto the things that we use with our hands. And we think about it differently. And this is kind of our foray into that. And it's a big swing, but getting involved in something that felt big and daunting, but also that made a lot of logical sense, it was a good fit for me.
That's really awesome. I've been obviously excited to see you find something very cool. And it's also very obvious you are your co-founder and chief marketing officer, I think.
Yes, that is true.
I had a moment of panic.
No, that's all right.
CMO, that's...
Go for it.
Marketing, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Chief, your voice. Yeah,
chief Moogle officer.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Moogles. So yeah.
I almost said that. So glad I didn't, but you know what?
It's all right.
It would have been fine too.
It would have been fine. Like.
We would have gotten through it together. It's cool to see your voice as such a part of this as well. The Kickstarter campaign video is actually you. It's you sort of narrating it.
We didn't have a whole lot of money to so that was just kind of me. Yeah. We kind of agonized over that for a little while, to be honest. But yeah, I spent a few weeks making that thing and got it out. Yep.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the video briefly, and we will get into, sort of the real meat and potatoes here of accessibility and also just the versatility of the device and other things. But just while we're talking about the video, I just love the acting commitment that is also present in there. There is some good stuff with, don't fall down while you're using this in VR, which is really lovely.
That's my wife, by the way.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, she did an amazing job.
Yeah, there's a part in the video that Danielle's alluding to where, I had basically pulled a bunch of TikToks of people injuring themselves actually kind of seriously playing VR stuff. And I was going to put them in there. And then I had a moment where I was like, one, this certainly illustrates a point. But I think it makes it too hard. It's kind of almost a bummer. And also, like, I was like, I feel like I should ask these people's permission to put to put their house accidents on this video. So when I kind of expressed that, Anne was like, all right, give this to me. She like took all of her stuff upstairs to her office and came back downstairs and says, all right, like, see if any of this works. I had no idea what she did. There are like 10 minutes of pratfalls on my on my hard drive of my wife with this headset on doing these like extremely obviously staged falls. It's very good. I want to string together like a compilation of those because it was a lot of hard work. But yeah, the commitment was impressive to me for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it also shows a passion, obviously, for this pretty cool thing and how it can work and how folks can use it. And it also, you know, there's also a pretty good foot joke in there. So, you know, I was impressed by it. It's like a good pitch with a good joke and et cetera, et cetera.
So. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. I worked too hard on it. So I'm glad that people seem to be liking it, which is good.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly glad.
Thanks.
that all worked out quite well. And you are in the Kickstarter campaign right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're in it. We're like, as of this recording, I think we're 10 days in. We hit our goal in 38 minutes, which was pretty cool. And that's a whole story if you want to talk about.
I would love to hear about the
Kickstarter meta of 2024.
Yeah.
Is essentially set a goal that's like pretty attainable in a few hours. And for a first-time hardware manufacturer, that looked to be between something like 10 to 25,000. So we went with 10. And then you spend like weeks and weeks basically getting emails and, you know, saying, hey, like, if you put down a dollar now, you can basically we'll let you know when we launch an hour and a half before we tell anybody else. Oh, wow. So you get in there and you get like the most discounted version of this thing and blah blah blah. And that's the meta. And I was a little bit skeptical, but I kept on talking to people who had been running campaigns, and this is kind of how it is, especially for hardware, because I'd run a couple of campaigns before on the game software side, and it is, you know, it's essentially like pretty straightforward. It's like, hey, tell us what you actually need, like the budget you need to do to make this one thing. Whereas with hardware, it's like, well, that number could be a little bit loosey-goosey, because even if we just sell $20,000 worth of something, we could still make those individual units and send them to some, them to people. Yeah. So it's kind of a different thing as opposed to like a big software project where it's like, oh, well, if we don't have the full amount, then we're not going to make the thing. So it was very interesting to like set up this project to basically activate an algorithm and get people involved right away and get it funded. And then now we're kind of in the middle of it where, you know, you hit a wall and now we're trying to just rally and figure a bunch of stuff out. And, but we're super happy that we hit that goal pretty fast.
Yeah. That's really awesome. Or the night before you turned it on, were you kind of doing the, you know, nervous pacing thing or kind of like, okay, all right, do we have it? Do we have the,
I was a wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, yeah. Do we have the numbers was like kind of the thing, you know, we had a consulting group kind of working with us called Launch Boom, and they basically help you kind of steer this meta. And they have like a formula where it's like, okay, if you have this many people who've shown interest, like you're probably good. And so we felt like we had done the work, but like, you know, I think I expressed it the day we launched and we hit it. I just thought like, okay, like we knew we put in the work to do it, but it's still kind of surprising when it worked out that way, you know. Sure. Like, yeah, just like I kind of feel like I'd been used to like years of hard work that I'm proud of, but it didn't necessarily lead to kind of that obvious one-to-one success that I wanted it to.
Yeah.
So this was a good validating thing. So, but yeah, the night before I was a wreck. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's fair enough. I was going to ask if you played anything relaxing with Glider to help you calm down from the night before jitters. But it's also okay if you didn't and you needed to do something else.
No. It's a good question. I've rediscovered Risk of Rain 2.
Oh, nice.
I won't say it's my Into the Breach, because I certainly haven't put I haven't put multiple thousands of hours into it. But it is a game I pick up pretty much if I'm just like, I need to kind of like chill for an hour.
Yeah.
And I do play that with Glider. And it's a good one to do with that. I was playing that. And around that time I had just gotten like a Tekken 8 code in.
Oh, nice.
So I was trying to figure out mappings for Glider in Tekken 8. And it was just fun to play around with that game, because that game is very good.
Yeah, it's quite good. I've seen a lot of people love it. I'm not a huge fighting game
person. I know. Yeah.
But I respect it. I respect the hustle. I think it's awesome. I love how intimate folks get.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about that sort of mapping issue. So not issue, obviously, more of a topic here. So, you know, just looking at the campaign, seeing kind of what's going on with it, it seems like this is quite a versatile tool. Obviously, you're saying you can use it for games or other software, which is cool. And you can custom map things. It looks like there are folks who have already done some mappings that you can kind of download, you can kind of share, but then you can also customize things yourself. How important is that to folks to be able to actually map these things themselves?
Well, I think it's really important. I mean, the one thing that I think, if you do enough, so coming from the media side, like, I think you spend, unless you're on a specific beat, I think you spend a lot of time engaging with a corner of the game's audience that is that's kind of already plugged into you. Like, I won't say that journalists have like an echo chamber, but like, we kind of have an echo chamber.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I'm still using we as if I still work in media, but it's like we kind of all talk to similar audiences, I feel like. Unless you're on a very specific beat, which is why I think when you see people who cover Twitch or like esports, like, you sometimes you're like, you're speaking another language and speaking to a different audience, because they literally are.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of audiences that I think mainstream game journalists don't always engage with. So part of my research in getting into Glider was spending a lot of time in subreddits and Discords of people who play a lot of games, and they just like they devote most of their waking hours to a specific game, a specific FPS or League of Legends or whatever.
Yeah.
And the thing that you come away with pretty quickly is that kind of everyone wants to customize their own situation. Like, a lot of people play in specific ways. You're seeing a lot of custom keyboards being made, a lot of technique videos on like how to get the most out of certain like click configurations and like RTS games, like just stuff that is just like, it's really kind of deep in the weeds, but you get a much better sense of how people actually want to engage with how they control stuff. So it was really important for us to be able to say, all right, up to 16 different actions can be put on your feet. What does that look like? And like, we know the ways that work for us and the ways that obviously make sense for us, but there will be configurations that we never even think of, you know, putting a very specific action to a toe tap or whatever that we wouldn't normally think about, but might actually free up someone's hands to do a lot more. We just want to be able to let them control exactly what their feet are doing, and also give them like dead zones in case they have like range of motion issues. Or you can eliminate dead zones basically completely and turn it into more or less a digital press. So like, you don't have to go far at all on a press down to activate what it is. So like, if you wanted to shoot with your feet and you don't want any sort of latency, you would basically remove the dead zone on that. So it was just important for us to give folks as many control options as possible, while also providing the vast majority of users very clear, obvious profiles that I think most people will be using. I think like a lot of folks, average folks, will be wanting to grab this thing, pick a game, and there will be a profile that works for them kind of out the box. And that's kind of what we want. But we also know that there are some like real like sickos that want to do some wild stuff. And like,
yeah,
we love sickos. Like this is kind of sicko stuff. So we want to be able to accommodate them as well.
That is fantastic. And I think a good time to bring up the accessibility, the whole topic, of course, of accessibility. I'm going to quote a little bit here from our State of the Game Industry 2024.
It was
we did with GDC and our pals at Omdia, all sort of Informa Tech folks. This is research. Basically, it was done with about 3,000 developers last October. We asked a lot of questions. They gave us answers. And a pretty large amount of developers have said they are working on accessibility measures in their games. So like in the software itself, things like closed captioning, colorblind mode, content warnings, you know, sort of the ability to map controls, things like that. And it was about 48% actually of respondents, which was up a whole 10% from 2023. So clearly developers care a lot about accessibility. That's sort of a generalization I think we can make. Something like 27% said no. And then there was a whole quarter of folks who didn't necessarily apply to them. We have a lot of folks who are, you know, teachers or sort of game development adjacent, but aren't necessarily working in commercial game development. So there's a lot of NAs, but generally the largest group was people who said, yes, we are implementing accessibility measures and care about this and want to do more about this, basically. So I thought that might be an interesting sort of stepping off point. Obviously, you know, Glider has so many use cases, but it also is, you know, I could see it being super useful for folks who need accessibility options, or that's just useful for them in their life. So, yeah.
Yeah, I such a big topic, too, because, you know, Grant Stoner, who's a really great accessibility reporter, just wrote a piece, I think it was over at Kotaku, about playing Last of Us 2 and God of War Ragnarok with the new PlayStation accessibility hardware thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, his takeaway was I'm really, really paraphrasing and condensing. You should go read the piece. But essentially, it's like we've now turned a lot of accessibility options into menu after menu after menu after menu of extremely small and maybe fussy settings that you have to basically work through, right?
Yeah.
And you know, his takeaway was like, you know, this is such amazing progress overall, but it's also kind of not the step in the direction that, you know, I think folks with disabilities want to see. You know, they maybe want to see more of a holistic approach. And I think, quite frankly, the conversation is actually involving software development too much. I think platform holders hold a lot of responsibility to make sure their platforms are actually accessible. And I think hardware manufacturers, especially third parties, ought to be allowed on these platforms. And if people have concerns about cheating or whatever, the platforms need to be taking care of those conversations and actually saying, hey, like I'm, you know, your listeners may not know this. I'm disabled. I'm in a wheelchair. So I'm going to make a quick analogy. And it's clumsy, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot. There used to be a shopping mall in Dallas where, inside the mall, there was an Abercrombie and Fitch that had a step up into it. Okay. And you had to find this weird side entrance to be let into the fucking Abercrombie and Fitch. Okay. So it was just kind of this like embarrassing kind of thing. And I only did it once because I was a child. But it's like, I was like, to me, that represents a software issue. So if a game ships and it is abrasive to the eyes, colorblind mode is absolutely needed, it's not there, there are very specific issues that game needs to address specifically. But to me right now, the analogy is really like the mall. I can't get into the mall. People with disabilities, like, there are a lot of things on a platform level that are not being addressed. And I think a lot of those things need to be baked into those platforms. And right now we're passing the buck to software studios. I really love that this is happening. I love that software studios are thinking about this stuff, and they need to think about it early and often. But I also kind of think that the ones with the really deep pockets that are actually running the platforms have a responsibility to start thinking about this stuff on a more holistic platform level, straight up. And yeah. I think like a lot of those issues per game could then be alleviated if on a platform level these things were existed. It would be really weird if you had to if you turned on your Roku and you went into the software settings and Roku was just like, this season of British Bake Off just didn't hand in their subtitles. Sorry, like
right.
I don't know. Tough. You know. Really tough. Tough
croissants. I don't know. I was trying to find one.
Like that would be really weird, right? So I think it's kind of strange that we've put so much onus on software studios because I've done software development before. It is really difficult. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be thinking about these things, but I think it's a triangle. I think it's hardware makers, I think it's platform holders, and I think it's software makers. And if we're not all kind of moving in the same direction, we're still going to end up with, I think, deficits for folks with disabilities. That's all to say.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about Glider, we're being pretty careful with our marketing language to not just come out the gate and say, like, we're building this for accessibility purposes, just because we feel like there are a few things happening there. One, there's a perception, even though it angers me, that when you start to market as an accessibility device, your market ceiling begins to shrink.
Sure.
I don't even know if that is real, but it's something that everyone I talk to panics about, and it frustrates me to death.
Oh, I can imagine.
First of all, wrong crowd, right?
Yep.
To be telling me that, like, I think your market ceiling might be low if you don't, you know, I'm like, frustrating thing for me to hear, but I'm willing to kind of meet people halfway with that conversation, if only because I see so many uses for this in everybody's life, not just people that have upper limb disabilities or fatigue or anything like that. I see real benefits because I'm not someone that actually struggles a lot with upper body gameplay. So this device is not something that I feel like I have to play games, but it's certainly helped me a lot to do things in my life.
Yeah.
So I experienced that firsthand. So we market it in that way to say, like, everybody can benefit from this. I really mean it. There is a purpose for everyone if they just put their feet on the thing. But I also know and really appreciate, you know, we're friends with folks at Able Gamers, and we've talked to a bunch of people in accessibility spaces. And we got emails, like a lot of emails before the Kickstarter campaign about people with rheumatoid arthritis flare-ups or missing limbs or congenital birth defects in their fingers and hands. And they were all universally psyched that there was a readily available piece of hardware coming to market that was reasonably priced, available, not through a special retailer, and plug and play out of the box with basically anything they wanted to do. And that's really powerful. I feel like I feel like accessibility markets are kind of tiptoed around in this kind of like, well, you know, we can't just give someone a plug and play thing. It's got to connect and modular, all this stuff. And some people do have those specific needs, but like, I think don't underestimate the power of just putting a piece of hardware out there with so much utility that folks with disabilities are just going to find it and it slides right into their setup and it becomes an integral part of their lives. You know, like, don't underestimate the power of being able to do that, you know? So we're excited about that angle. We're in the coming weeks probably going to be working with some, you know, influencers and content creators on the accessibility side that we're excited about. And, it's definitely an exciting part of this on a personal level and a business level. So, yeah.
Oh, that makes perfect sense to me. I personally am not a person who has disabilities, but I have a bad wrist. I can't play mouse and keyboard games. I haven't been able to for about 10 years. I'm excited to have some other option potentially for using something else. Even just having like wrist pain.
Yeah.
You know, just that something that small, like that's how, you know,
Well, what
would be useful for all of these
things. One of my favorite things is, like, we were showing this off at an event over the summer, and we had someone come up to us and started playing Rocket League with Glider, and they kind of stopped and they were like, wow, yeah, like, you know, it was so funny. He was so sincere, and he just didn't even think about how it sounded, but it was so cute in a way. But he just was like, yeah, I'm not disabled, but like, I broke my finger when I was a kid, and I just really haven't been able to play with a keyboard. And like, you know, in my head, I'm like, that means you're a disabled dog. Like, it's like, you don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be this complicated. Like, if you cannot do a thing you used to be able to do, that counts. Like, it counts. Like, I think, like, that's the other part of this, is that, like, yeah, there are a lot of Americans, a lot of people all over the world that would not sit here and say, like, well, I'm a disabled person. But if you're like, well, I can't play keyboard and mouse games for more than 10 minutes without my hands basically starting to fall apart, I'm like, hey, like, guess what? You know, like, you might be more in this category than you think you are. And I think that's the other part of it, right? Is that, like, I think so many people don't consider themselves this way because they don't go out and get the placard or the fancy license plate, or like, or they still feel like they can navigate their lives in a way that maybe someone in a wheelchair might not be able to. But like, disability is like not a monolith. It's like such a huge spectrum. And it's funny to me, people who are like, well, I'm not even disabled, but I literally can't do this thing. And I'm like, all right, like, tomato, tomato. I'm not going to correct you, but sure. Like, if you're excited about this device, like, that's awesome. So that's been one of the other rewarding things of just seeing people who don't consider themselves in that camp going, well, actually, this alleviates a problem for me. And I'm like, that's great. I'm not going to correct you. I'm just going to let you do that.
I'm finding things out about myself on this podcast. So that's here we go, friends. It's a very special episode. We are going to take a very quick ad break right here. And then I want to get in to some of the other very cool use cases for Glider.
Since you're listening to the Game Developer Podcast, you might be familiar with GameDeveloper.com, but just in case you aren't, let me tell you just a little bit about our site. Every day, we publish news, features, and developer insights on the topics that matter most to game developers and industry professionals. From interviews with developers of all stripes, to in-depth analysis on industry trends, to practical how-to advice, we aim to be a complete source of information for all folks who make games. Be sure to look at our blog section, a resource by devs for devs. Recently, we featured pieces by creators on creating creepy liminal spaces in indie horror games, a design analysis of detective mechanics in the classic Sega CD adventure Snatcher, and a treatise on why creative ownership matters. Check it all out on GameDeveloper.com.
Okay, so John, I think you know this about me, but I'm a speedrunning fiend. Oh, I don't speedrun. I do not do speedrun.
But you love them.
But I'm watching them constantly, constantly throughout the day. I find them fascinating. I think it's super, super cool and interesting. I love what it says about game design. And I especially love when they use devices that aren't just a, you know, console controller to perform the speedrun on. And I actually saw that the Glider page shared a piece about Peanut Butter the dog, who did a speed run of, I think, Gyroscope at AGDQ
Gyromite.
Which was very cool. And it's sort of in the tradition of, you know, there's plenty of speedruns that are like, you actually physically use a GameCube itself. Yep. Like, there's a Kirby game, I think, that uses the GameCube itself. Yep. Things like that. This got me thinking about using Glider for speedruns. And I wanted to know if anybody from that community has kind of reached out to you and been like, oh, I could play Super Mario 64 on this. I could get a, you know, world record, you know, kind of using this. Just out of curiosity, if anybody from that community has reached out, or if you yourself, even if you're just kind of projecting into your mind palace, can see this as a thing.
We've chatted with JSR, the steward of peanut butter, the Shiba Inu.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So when I saw it the first time that PB was going to run, I sent JSR a DM like immediately. And I was like, hey, like, no big deal. You're in the middle of it. I'm not saying you should switch gears or anything like that, but like, we have this foot controller, check it out. You know, maybe whatever, blah, blah, blah. Maybe telling turns, telling things out of school, but like,
I love it.
After about a day after the run, which was amazing. And I was, mm-hmm. I was glued to my computer.
It was fantastic.
I sent him a DM that said like, oh my gosh, congrats. That was so amazing. Like genuinely, I have two dogs that are both unbelievably poorly behaved. I was like, I just said, I'm so impressed with like how patient you are as a trainer, just, you know, whatever, and left it at that. And he shot me a note like a day later that said, you know, we had like so many issues with that controller during the run that we should talk. And so we're going to talk about it. You know, we have a long list of people that are going to get prototypes here pretty soon. But the speedrunning thing is like so cool. The next day as well, someone beat Super Mario 64 with a Rock Band drum kit.
Oh my God.
So like this was a great AGDQ for alternative controllers, which like I love. Yeah. Glider percent of AG of GDQ.
That's what I'm thinking.
100% on the table, like 100%. I think it's kind of my ultimate dream to have like a FromSoft marathon kind of run on Glider. Like I'd love to see like a I'd love to see like an any percent like Dark Souls 1, 2, 3, Elden Ring kind of Glider percent, you know, any of those games individually or kind of come together. I would love to see that. Yes. And then also just like, you know, weird stuff that's not, you know, kind of on my radar at all that would be with this. So definitely one of those things that I would not be surprised if by the time that Summer Games Done Quick or the next AGDQ rolls around, you'll see a run or two with Glider. We would love to see that for sure.
That is extremely cool. I'm picturing a lot of the possibilities here and also kind of like, oh, what would it take to get that you know, Dark Souls all Souls games run with Glider kind of thing. You know, like they do a lot of relays that
they do relays and they could basically hand it off for game. Yeah. It's like I definitely want this to be something that people think about maybe every single, you know, every 6 months. Like I would love someone to run a Glider percent you know, at all of these events. I think that'd be so cool. So yeah, we're definitely thinking about speed running as part of kind of our outreach strategy for sure.
Awesome. Oh, I love that. And it ties into other things as well. That just happens to be a,
sure.
You know, I know a place that we're both kind of excited about. Speed runs are just fun to watch. They're pretty cool. But obviously this device can be used for all kinds of software. There's sort of I think it's like a music software use case that folks are doing. That's extremely cool. There's also use cases for, hey, you're in esports and this is, you know, a way of, you know, potentially switching scenes or something, having extra controls at your disposal, being able to control things in a different way. So a lot of use cases, even things, of course, as you're saying, you might not have thought of yet, but
honestly,
pretty cool.
Yeah. We, you know, every few days at this point, I feel like we get a question either on the Kickstarter or via email or whatever. That asks about a very specific use case that, you know, we frankly haven't tested. There haven't been that many things that we've said no to. Sure. Like there are so many things that we're like, there's no reason this shouldn't work. And then we go test it and it works fine. So we're still kind of testing the limits of it, which is kind of why we haven't like released an exhaustive list, because I'm since we're so removed from some of these worlds, I'm worried about saying specific things in order to give people like the right idea of what it can do. Right.
So
we're still kind of working on that exhaustive list, but yeah, like, I used it to do some video production stuff, like, you know, scrub video with your feet, moving frame by frame with your feet while you're marking stuff up, with your hands, you know? Nice. So like, that's one. And music production, you know, using pedals to, you know, add reverb or effects to certain instrumentations on a digital level. We've talked about MIDI stuff and getting that to work, and really anything that will accept kind of a keyboard mouse input can be mapped this way. So it's one of those things where kind of like fashion, right? Goes from day to night. Like, you know, if you're if you're done playing and you want to, you know, keep using it, it's still going to basically slot into a lot of your hobbies and work situations and perform beautifully. So it's a powerful little thing. It's pretty neat.
Nice. I see that you like this product that you're
I do. It's like cool. it's hard because like I think I'm biased hugely, but I'm also I also see so much of the energy is I think me feeding off from other people who have seen it and played with it and seen the benefits and ask us questions and their minds race and we've had peers in the games industry say some just unbelievably nice things about it too when they've either tried it or just even or, you know, seen some stuff about it. So it's just been one of those things where most of my excitement comes from, I think, the knowledge that it really is a great product that is doing something different. And you know, about 1% of it is the stuff I have to put on to do the job I do. So
yeah.
So that's a good, but that's a good split. Like I'm glad it's not the other way around. I've absolutely worked on things where it was the other way around, where I'm like, all right, I got to put on the costume here and go talk about this. And, and hopefully some real enthusiasm comes through here. It's kind of the opposite on this thing, which is good.
That's awesome. I want to ask a semi-related question here. And yeah. I guess this is going towards the enthusiasm, but it's also going towards like a very real thing we're all going through in the industry right now. And just that it has been obviously a pretty atrocious time for a lot of folks in the game industry. The layoffs are just absolutely upsetting and depressing, and it's tough. And a lot of developers have lost their jobs, and it's a tough time right now. And I was going to ask you if, you know, having so far a successful campaign, having something to be excited about, does it give you a bit of hope? Does it give you a little bit of, hey, maybe something good can come through this rather difficult time, this rather, you know, depressing and uncertain time in our industry?
Yeah. And I think like that's also connected to feedback too. Like I posted on, you know, I'm getting into LinkedIn now.
Yep.
You have to, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. And I was honest. I was like, I feel weird kind of talking. This is like the night before we launched. I was like, I feel weird talking about this, but I just, you know, I am excited about it. It is something that is new and different. And, you know, I kind of felt weird talking about it, but then so many people responded to it positively. Like, well, God, at least something's happening that is, you know, kind of like exciting and new and is breaking kind of the conversation of not that we shouldn't continue to have those conversations, but kind of breaking the pain of the constant conversation that I think we're left with all these layoffs and uncertainty. I mean, we're going to see a lot of new things come out of the next couple of years. And I think some of it's not going to make it, just, you know, law of numbers, you know, statistically, a lot of this stuff is going to fail, but like a lot of people are going to be facing hardship and they're going to start something new and they're going to chase something that they've wanted to do. And there'll be opportunities for us to be excited again. And I think, you know, Glider represents maybe one of the first kind of things that people can rally around and get excited about, but there will be more. And I think like everyone's spirit is, you know, kind of in a weird place right now. And I think having those things to hold on to that are hopeful is definitely important. And also, like, you know, keep in mind, like the person that really facilitated the creation of this device and kind of getting it into this market has absolutely no games experience. I mean, this is a 70 plus year old man with a engineering background that came up with this idea, because he just likes innovation and new stuff and thinking about why haven't we done this? You know, asking why not? And so innovation and excitement and new things in this games industry doesn't also have to come from the same people we've always looked at it coming from, which I also think is really fascinating and exciting. And yeah, I think we got to take the positives where we can get them and rally behind them if we can. Yeah. It's not always easy, but it is nice to have.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was going to ask, as we're starting to wrap up here, wanted to ask, and you semi answered this already. So if this is a little too redundant, let me know, and I'll do a duck and roll. You know, do a little boxing move here. Do a little duck and roll. We'll do something else. But I did want to see if there was anything that developers who, if they happen to be super excited about this device, you know, is there anything you might want them to look out for? Now, it does sound like, again, you're kind of saying, hey, accessibility, maybe it's a better thing to come from platform holders. Maybe it's the mall analogy you were using, certainly. But if there were things that would be helpful for developers to know about, hey, I would love to make something that works well with Glider. I'd like to make something that, you know, has a nice, happy, out of the box kind of solution for Glider.
Yeah, I mean, we've tentatively worked with a few VR companies that are really interested in, nice. In a locomotion solution that doesn't involve standing up and walking around.
Nice, yeah.
And that was actually kind of the first iteration of Glider, was entering it into a VR locomotion competition to say, like, okay, teleportation, you know, is a way that people kind of move around in some VR games, feels a little fake. and then walking around and clearing a space is not only an accessibility issue, but it's also a practical adoption issue. I think a lot of people don't really want to be thinking about that every single time they set up a VR device. Yeah. So VR companies have come to us being very interested in kind of working with us on an early stage to kind of see if there's a solution here. Like, if they're running into an issue with locomotion, now they know that there is something that is coming to market that could be a really elegant thing for them in their specific game. In terms of, like, you know, what you would want to map to Glider for, you know, in a developer's mind.
Yeah.
Armored Core 6 was a really good example of this.
And
Ethan Gatch over at Kotaku even says it in his review. It's in the opening paragraph. He essentially says there's not enough room on his hands or on the PlayStation 5 controller to do everything that he needs to do in a moment because that game is so frenetic. And boy, there could not have been a better advertisement for Glider inadvertently than a prominent reviewer saying, like, my controller literally does not have the capacity to handle the stuff I need to do. I don't think games need to get more complicated.
Sure.
But I am now relieved to say that when you deal with a complicated game like Armored Core 6 or a complicated game like Apex Legends, where mobility is super important, but also difficult to pull off with a standard gamepad, now there's a solution that actually, like, absolutely solves that. I mean, fundamentally solves the issues with, I would say, high control option, difficult games.
Yeah.
So think about that. You know, if you're like, you know, it's not only is it a way to be thinking about, like, maybe you can simplify your design, and that's one thing. And Glider is still a great device for even simple games.
Yeah.
But that's also one of those things where I'm like, I'm interested to see how makers of complex games go into their designs now, knowing that there's a device that can make some of that stuff easier.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing. Like, I remember Steel Battalion. I don't know. I'm aging myself.
Oh, yes.
Here,
I remember Steel Battalion. Yeah.
You know, Steel Battalion, way ahead of its time, was an original Xbox game that you know, it had to be played with this giant, like, mech setup thing.
Yeah.
And
it's
really
a deck of things. It was many buttons.
Many buttons. Like a whole ass thing. And like and it was very, very cool. And way ahead of its time. But like, wow, what a cool thing. Like when it worked, it really worked. And there's something about Glider that does kind of remind me of adding that kind of functionality to really any game. So if you're like struggling with overloading, Glider basically makes it feel like you're not overloaded at all. Now, this could create a monster, right? And like a bunch of people could make games that are like that are like so complicated that it's really tough to navigate. But like, but I'm like, okay, we've reached this moment where even dyed in the wool game players who write about it for a living are noticing that we're bumping up against a wall.
Yeah.
You know, do things get more complicated? Maybe not. And I kind of hope that they don't. Sure. But if they do, then this is a device to accommodate for all of that stuff. So it's like, I think it's cool for a bunch of different reasons and a bunch of different developers.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I definitely had the Armored Core vision in my mind at one point as well. Oh, I'm not gonna lie. I definitely had that in there and I was like, oh yeah.
It's fun. There are like two types of sprinting in that game. There's you know, jumping and rocket boosting. Like, so when I started to map that stuff to my feet, I was like, ah, okay, now I can move around and actually shoot. Like, it actually felt like that it was packed in with the game, which is like such a weird thing to say about a thing that I I'm involved in making, but it's like, Once I mapped that stuff to Armored Core, I was like, oh, okay. Well, I like playing this game. Great. I don't know if we're allowed to say it, but Jordan in the producer chat shouts to Virtual On, which is also another one of those games that like was also really complicated. But definitely comes to mind when I think about this kind of stuff.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Virtual On. We're really going down a little mech.
Yeah.
Path? I don't know. A mech path.
I also thought about Tribes. Did you ever play Tribes?
Oh, sure. But I know of it. I know the vibe. Yeah.
You could ski down mountains in that game to get like a lot of momentum. Yeah. Like, I haven't fired up Tribes in forever. I might do that with Glider this weekend. We'll see.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Anyway. Have a fun stream.
Streaming
it. You know, I don't know. Just an idea.
Possible.
It is possible. It's a thing that can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I want to give you an opportunity to shout out anything that you would like to at this point as we're going to start to wrap up.
Yeah.
Our shows are usually around this time, so I'm going to start the wrap-up process. But if there are things you want to shout out, projects, people, places, Glider, where people can find that, et cetera.
Yeah, I'll start with Glider. I mean, you know, if you want to support us, we have a Kickstarter going on until the end of February. Right now you can get it for $100 off retail, which is pretty nice. You can find it by searching Glider, GLYDR on Kickstarter, or just go to feetlegal.com.
Excellent. Yes,
that's right. Feetlegal.com. So that would be wonderful, and definitely like share it with folks that like might need it, or, you know, if you know of the person I just described that was like, I'm not disabled, but my hand's broken and I can't really play video games the way I used to. It's like, you poke them and be like, hey, this is a thing for you. It really, anyone in your life that you think could benefit from it, it would really mean a lot if you'd share it. It's a big, cool project, and it's, you know, three indie people. We're not backed by a big corporation. We're trying to disrupt this huge thing and create a new category here. So and then, you know, other shouts, I don't know.
Yeah.
But Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is coming out soon. I don't know. I'm really excited about that.
Yesterday morning about that one. So yeah, it's good
stuff. I'm excited about that. I don't know. I thought the first one was really great, so I'm excited about that. So shouts out to that game. Let's see. I think that's it. I don't really have any. I've been very heads down with this thing.
Yeah.
Well,
fair enough. Head down on something cool. Sounds pretty good to me. I like it. I think it's good.
Thanks for the chat.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Of course.
And showing off the wares a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
It's pretty awesome. So thank you so much, John. As always, this episode was produced by Jordan Mallory, and I encourage you all to have a wonderful day. Keep on keeping on and being a game developer.